my mind, you just wake up and go rake.
Featuring World Series champion Will Middlebrooks.
High drive, deep left field for Middlebrooks. Back, and that is gone. Third home run of the day for Will Middlebrooks. The trifecta has the Red Sox on top, 9-0.
Follow at Wake and Rake Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Here's Danny and Will.
What up, party people? Another episode of Wake and Rake Podcast, part of the Believe Network, episode 80. And yes, you recognize a familiar face. He's back, the great Will Middlebrooks. Just a couple days after the anniversary of your 3-homer game in Toronto. Brooksy, the boys were talking about it in the Fantasy League chat, and we decided that we need to switch up our Wake and Rake intro, because every time you click on the Wake and Rake podcast, it says Will Middlebrooks, 3 home runs. Don Arzillo doing the play-by-play.
Yeah. Why do we have to switch that up?
Because we're tired of it. We know you hit 3 home runs in Toronto. We
don't care.
So the next
time. It's really hard to do. So next time. And it only happened once. I think I only had 2 other multi-home run games. So listen, April 7th is my day. Okay.
Yeah. All right. We'll let you have it on April 7th. Every other day that we do a podcast.
So you're going to listen to them over what I want.
Yep.
In my podcast.
I'm a man of the people.
Well. When they start contributing to this podcast, then we'll start listening to them. How about that?
Yeah. Ryan Wesner is going to love this episode. We're talking Tampa Bay Rays because we have to talk Tampa Bay Rays.
We have to.
They're not.
We got to talk about how I predicted that they were going to come in last place in the AL East. That was a very hopeful thing. I was hopeful more than what I actually thought was going to happen, because every year I count out Tampa in hopes that it's just a team that the Sox can beat. Man. Yeah, we'll get into this. I missed so far. There's a lot. This is 150 some odd games left, but as of now, swing and a miss.
That's a great lead in into my question, actually. Okay. We're about a week and a half in. Some teams are off to slow starts. Some teams are off to hot starts. What's the mindset of a player right now? You're not thinking playoffs right now. You're not thinking anything. You're just trying to wreck victories, right?
No, you're not thinking about the playoffs, man. You're thinking about the next game, right? You're thinking about this is still considered like getting off to a good start. It's tough this part of the season. Like, you look up at the scoreboard every time you come up to the plate and you're like, shit, I'm hitting 150, or like, I'm hitting 400. And it's just a complete vibe changer. So at this point in the year, you just want to be getting knocks. You obviously want to be winning, but getting off to a good start individually is huge. Getting off to a bad start for a week or two and then having to dig out of that hole, and you feel like you have to get 2 hits every game to get up to like 250. That's tough. Now, when you're already hitting, 350, 400, you don't go into cruise control, but you just, that pressure is just gone and you start just playing better baseball. So getting off to a good start is really important. So you're thinking about that for sure.
Particularly young players, right? Your veteran guys, they know what they're going to produce, you know?
Yes and no. I mean, sometimes these veterans, let's say for Red Sox, Rafi Devers, let's say if he had gotten off to a bad start, there's a lot of pressure there for a guy who just signed a $350 million deal. So the media is going to be on you regardless if you're making the money or not, because that's just the market you play in, is the nature of the beast. But like Kike has gotten off to a very cold start. He's made 5 errors at shortstop. He put a ton of pressure on himself because he's replacing Xander Bogaerts in a market in which they didn't think he should be playing shortstop, because he's a very good center fielder. And he kind of had that, I want to prove everybody wrong. I think he can play shortstop. But I think he just has a lot of weight on his shoulders right now because of the market, because of the situation, and that's caused him to kind of get off to a slow start. It's also baseball. He's a streaky player. He's going to hit 150 for a stretch, and then he's going to hit 400 for a stretch with homers. That's just who he is.
It's a big difference, too, between going into the season as the starting shortstop and just kind of filling the void midseason when somebody gets hurt. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of lead up, a lot of more expectation.
And for sure. And that's why there's a lot of question now, because Adam Duvall yesterday goes for a diving play, hurts his wrist. He's been swinging the bat like freaking Barry Bonds lately. I mean, I think his runs created plus is like 335 plus 335
mm-hmm.
plus or 100 is league average. That's how good he's been. His OPS has been like in the 2000s. It's been something ridiculous the way he's been. He got off to a start, so that's really tough for the Sox offense. But now it leads to all the Boston media and the fans. Well, now we got to move Kike to center field. He's your shortstop. Now who plays shortstop? You bring in a utility player. You bring in Bobby from AAA, who's coming up today to fill in. So there's a lot of questions in Boston right now regarding Duvall. As of right now, it is 11:49 on April 10th, on Monday, April 10th. We still don't have an update on Duvall because last night they couldn't get the MRI done. So they traveled to Tampa. They probably did it this morning. So there'll probably be an update here in a couple hours when all the media gets to the park. But I think Bobby comes up for a little bit, fills in as a right-handed bat off the bench, maybe plays a little shortstop. I don't know. I think they need to get a right-handed outfielder in that spot because they're lefty heavy. I don't want this to turn into a Red Sox podcast, so ask me another question.
On today's episode, we are doing providing some numbers on what the pitch clock has given us. So far, they're trending in the right direction, attendance-wise, runs-wise, power-wise, etc. And then we're going to talk about some hot starts, some slow starts, kind of go around the league and figure out just what's been going on through this first week and a half of the season. Let's talk about the Sox just a little bit more. What can you tell us about your week up in Boston, in the booth, outside the booth, in the clubhouse, in the stadium?
I wasn't in the booth. I wasn't doing the broadcast. I was doing the pre and post game show, the first two series. Just the vibes around this team are really good. It was really cold too. So you go from Florida to where it's 88 degrees to wind chills at 30 degrees for baseball games. And this was during the day. It was brutal. The first three games of the year, they scored 9 runs in each game. So 27 runs in 3 games, which is, I don't think that's happened very often to start a season, not in Boston at least. So the offense was rolling. Then Pittsburgh came in and swept them. And everybody's like, what the heck's going on? But Pittsburgh looked really good. Brian Reynolds is a god. O'Neill Cruz, rest in peace. Rest in pieces.
Yeah, he didn't die. He did not. He's alive. He's very much alive.
Freaking ankle, dude. That sucks because he's such a, you know, just part of that young core of superstars that's coming up. He'll be fine. I don't know the details of it, but he's young enough. He's going to get that fixed and he'll be back. Hopefully it doesn't affect his mobility since he's such a big shortstop. That's the only thing I'm kind of worried about. I don't know how bad the severity of the break, so I'm not sure. If there's ligament damage and all that, like that's another issue, but it didn't look good. But I was really impressed with Pittsburgh's arms out of the bullpen.
Bednar,
like, Bednar's good, but they had other guys coming in too that I like didn't even know and were nasty. Now it was cold. That plays into it as well, but it was cold when the Sox were scoring 9 runs against Baltimore every game too. So there was a lot of offense. Wind was howling out 20 miles an hour every day. So the ball was flying. A lot of questions. Is the ball juice this and that? It's hard to tell when the wind's blowing out that much. I know when it's cold, the ball doesn't fly as much, but the wind overpowered the temperature, in my opinion. I think the Red Sox are a fun team. I think they're fun. I think this second time through the rotation, they're pitching much better. They were in Detroit. They weren't playing a good team, but Detroit also took 2 games from Houston. So baseball's just unpredictable. We know that. I think Boston has a fun team. I think they're, like I said, their pitching is coming back around this second time through the rotation and looks much better, thank God. The bullpen has looked about what we expected. I think there's been a couple surprises from guys like Caleb Ort, who had a terrible spring training, and he's been throwing the ball well. Zach Kelly, who's the guy who made his first opening day, came up last year, made opening day this year. He's been like their most important guy, coming in going 2 innings every time, so giving them some innings. And then the back end with Kinley and Chris Martin, those guys and John Schreiber have looked really good. So lots of positive from Boston. A lot hanging on Duvall's injury today. So we got to wait and see what happens with that. But I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I know you saw this, but MLB players with 50 or more defensive runs scored and 150 homers since 2016. Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story, and Adam Duvall.
Two of those players playing for the Bo Sox. Yeah, two of them hurt right now too, but
pretty good company there.
Pretty good company. Yeah. But you don't, people don't look at him as like a plus defender, and he's definitely above average. And he's not going to go out there and hit 280 with 30 and 100. He's going to go out there and probably hit 230, 240, but he has the ability to hit 30 plus homers, which so far this season, small sample size, he's been a god.
Everybody assumes when they see a big, built, large home run hitting outfielder that he can't field. Hunter Renfroe, Adam Duvall, those are both guys that are plus-plus defenders. Trout.
He's a freak, though. He didn't really count. We can't talk about him with other people.
Gosh. Him and Shohei look pretty good. Angels are off to a nice start.
They are. You know, they... And then...
They're doing similar shit,
though. I
want to
believe
in
them. What?
They're doing similar shit, though.
About to say, like, the other night, they got beat 4-3. Shohei had two hits. Yeah. Trout had a 2- or 3-run homer, and nobody else even had a hit. It's like, there's the Angels, you know? But I don't know. I think they're in contention come September. I do.
We never talked about the Anthony Rendon interaction with the fan in Oakland. Thoughts?
You can't do that. Can't do that, but I understand it.
Yeah.
Because these people are in the stands and they say things to you they would never say to you on the street because they're protected by a guardrail or the fact that, oh, he's not going to do anything because he's going to get fined or suspended, which Rendon did. And Rendon just kind of did what everybody always wants to do when a fan's calling you a bitch or this and that. Like, why are you attacking me, calling me these names because of a baseball game or because we lost a game? Like, you, if you come up to me on the street, I'm going to knock you out if you talk to me like that. Why would you walk up to a random person and be like, hey, you're a bitch. You suck.
I always said the same thing with drivers. Like, you know how people flip you off because they're shielded by their cars?
You can't.
But if you just walked up to somebody that cut you off in the grocery store with your car,
flip them off? No. I'm going to choke you.
Yeah, no, not at all. Like, you might say
I'm
going to
choke you and bury your face in the Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yes.
It's like social media.
Yeah.
There's no repercussions. Like, you can't get punched in the face. I'm not condoning violence, man. Like, don't get on me and cancel me because I'm told you I would put you in a choke slam in Publix. Like, I'm just making a point that people think they are protected by a guardrail or the fact that they don't look at athletes as real human beings. So the one time that somebody snaps at you, you don't be surprised. Like, oh my God, why would he do such a thing? Because that's real life, unfortunately. And you got, the best part is, like, a lot of people didn't see the whole video. Like, he was at the front of, like, the front row, not on the tunnel, but like looking at home plate, he yelled at David Fletcher first, and Fletcher just kind of shrugged it off. Like, 99.9% of people do, and our players do, and just whatever. It's just some idiot being an idiot. And then he does it to Rendon, and Rendon walks past him and calls him over. Says, hey, come on. Come here. I need to talk to you. And the guy's like, oh, this is cool. He wants to talk to me. Totally forgot that he just called him a bitch to his face. And then Rendon just grabbed him. People said, oh, he swung at him. I think that was just to kind of like scare him. That wasn't a punch. That was just kind of like he tried to knock his hat off, is what he did.
That's where
if he wanted to punch him in the face, he would have punched him in the face when he was holding him by his chest.
That's where he crossed the line, though, is when he called it a swing, call it a intimidation.
Listen, he did it to like hit his hat.
Whatever it was, that's
it was an open hand. He swung at the tip of his hat to like knock his hat off to like just embarrass him. The line is when he grabbed his shirt. You can stand there and talk to him and say whatever you want to say, but you can't put your hands on the fan.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Right. Like I said, it's not real life, so you can't, I guess. I mean, it's frowned upon anywhere, but you just have to hold yourself to a higher standard because the league's gonna hold you to a higher standard. But I do understand why he did it. And in God, it felt good to see somebody do it, you know?
Yeah, I wish fans got called out more for that type of thing. Because I think the fan came out as more of a loser than Anthony Rendon did. Unfortunately, Rendon's the one that has the platform. And Rendon's the one that's going to get ridiculed.
The player's always going to get crushed for that.
Because nobody knows who the fan is.
Right, exactly.
Nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Do I condone it? No. Was it dumb? Yeah, it was. But 100% understand how Rendon felt there.
Mike Trout has seen 194 pitches so far this year. He's only swung at 12 pitches outside the strike zone. 12
out of
nearly 200 pitches. That's an 11% rate, which is third best in Major League Baseball.
Third. Jeez.
Well, like Robbie Grossman's up there. Robbie Grossman swung at 6 pitches outside the zone this year. That dude's just a disciplined machine.
Wow. All
right, let's get into the numbers from the pitch clock, all right? So far, the average time of game is at 2 hours and 39 minutes, according to Baseball Reference. That's compared to last season's time of 3 hours and 6 minutes. So it is a 27-minute difference. Runs per game, 9.38 compared to last year, 8.57. So we're seeing nearly a whole run per game. Offense is up. The ball is flying. I know you mentioned that the wind was blowing out in Boston, but people are commenting about it already. That are the balls
juicing
again? Yeah, so...
What's her name? Meredith Wills. She's an astrophysicist who does the study on the balls.
Mm-hmm.
She put out a study on some balls she studied from this year, and the drag on the balls, which is the drag is air resistance, basically. So the less drag, the further the ball will go. It is lower from the last two seasons, or from last, we'll see, from last season. But it's like if last year's balls were here on drag, this year is a little below it, but then 2019 is like way down here when everything was like launch city. So it's not like back when the balls were juiced. It's just below last year though. So I think there's a combination of that a little bit. I think with the pitch clock, maybe pitchers aren't throwing as hard. I'd be curious to see average velocity throughout with starting pitching maybe, or even all pitchers, just to see, because guys are working faster. They're going to get gassed a little more, and maybe they're trying to save a little energy, or they're just getting tired. That could be part of it. I don't know. Either way, I think the transition in the rules has been seamless. Yes, we have some violations here and there, but I mean, they're getting less and less and less. That's a combination of the players adapting. And I think it's a little more, the umpires having a little more feel in certain situations where they might give an extra second here or there to the hitter because of, you know, just the situation late in games, this and that, which is great. That needed to happen. There's still not as much discretion for the from the umpires that I think there needs to be, but it's working. It's exactly what the league wanted. And I think the overall entertainment value, the product of baseball is much more watchable. This isn't 27 minutes less of baseball. It's 27 less minutes of guys standing around scratching their nuts and fixing their batting gloves and tying their shoes and mound visits and just stuff that doesn't need to happen, which was part of the game. And I understand why some people don't like it because that's just part of the game. But as a viewer, I watch every game of the Red Sox. Even when I'm home, I watch it. The product is better. It's constant action. There's more balls in play. There's more base runners because the lack of shifting. The bigger bases, if that's the reason guys are running more, I think it has more to do with the limited disengagements by the pitcher. That has more to do with running than actually the bases themselves. But just the traffic and constant baseball plays happening. You watch a game and a two and a half hour game actually feels like a 2 hour game. Yeah. Because you're just like, it's the seventh? You're like, I always look up and it's like, I'm doing pre and post in Boston. It's like, we do the pre-post game, 7 o'clock game. Show starts at 6. Or the 7:10 game. Pre-game starts at 6. We're done at 7. I'll go get like a quick bite of food from media dining or wherever. And I come back and normally it's like the second or third. And it's like, it's the fourth, fifth. I'm like, dude, what happened? I'm like checking my box score, like trying to get my notes down for the post-game show. It's flying. And I just think it's exactly what baseball needed. And I think you look at attendance, you look at viewership, it's going up. That should tell you it's working too.
Ricky Henderson would steal no fewer than 200 bags with today's
rules. Oh my God.
Right?
It's insane. Yeah, you're going to – teams – I mean, Boston gave up so many to Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore's a running team anyways.
The Red Sox are getting ran all over.
It was better this last series. Detroit didn't run much. Baltimore ran – even Pittsburgh didn't run as much. Baltimore ran wild. They had like five steals a game.
They're one of the most athletic teams in all of baseball, too. Keep that in mind.
Up and down their lineup, they're young, and they can run. So
Gunnar,
they're going to do that on everybody.
Yeah, Henderson, Mullins.
Mateo.
Mateo, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of athleticism for
Sure. Mateo's in their nine hole and just runs wild.
Yeah. Attendance, by the way, is trending upward as well. Average attendance, keep my small sample size, fellas. You know, we know that. But right now, attendance per game is at 29,838. That is the most since 2017. So people are coming out to the games, not despite the weather not being fantastic.
I was going to say, like, if you look in the Northeast, there's still a lot of cold weather games. And normally opening day, sell out, it's great. But I was going to games in Boston, and I'm sitting out there with my host of the show, Tom Caron. But pregame, we're like, man, there's no way. This is like a Wednesday day game against the Pirates. It's 40 degrees. The wind chill's 33. No chance there's more than like 10,000 people here. Like, why would they? And there'd be like 22.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, dude, what's going on? And that's Fenway. Fenway holds like 37,000. So it looked like the bottom section of the stadium was completely full. And you're like, what? It's a day game on a Wednesday against Pittsburgh. Nothing against Pittsburgh, but they don't normally travel well with fans or bring out the hometown fan. So I've actually been pretty impressed with that. I think guys want to see the new rules.
Yeah.
I think in Boston, they want to see the new team because they want to have something to yell at if they don't play well. But I'm impressed with how many fans have been coming out.
Yeah, TV ratings haven't been disclosed yet. And people are thinking, oh, it's the highest since 2017, but we had two seasons with COVID limitations with attendance. Well, in 2019, the average attendance was 28,203. It's more than, 1,600 more people on average so far.
So that's per game?
That's per game across the league. So,
well, you got to think there's plenty of stadiums with... I would say that evens out. I mean, there's a lot of big name stadiums filling up stadiums, but you got to put in Oakland, you got to put in Pittsburgh, you got to put in that nobody's really going. So that's impressive.
Yeah, nobody's really going to Oakland games yet. We'll see.
Not.
Well, maybe ever. Maybe Vegas is in the cars. I don't know. Yeah. You want to talk about Tampa? 9-0. Best run differential through their first nine games.
57. I just tweeted that. I was like, how is this real?
Since the 1800s, we haven't seen a team with a better run differential through their first nine games of the year. They're destroying teams. But they've played the Tigers, the Nationals, and the Oakland A's. Arguably the expected.
I don't care. The worst team in baseball can play the best team in baseball and get swept.
They can.
They can. That's, I understand. Yes, they're bad for a reason, but you still got to beat them. And they're not just beating them; they beat everybody by at least four runs. Mm-hmm. They're dismantling teams. I think they won 11-0 yesterday to go 9-0.
Yeah, what? Against James Kaprielian was on the mound. He's a good pitcher. Guys.
Exactly. He's got good stuff.
Yeah,
they've hit more home runs than they've allowed runs. Not. Oh, let me restate. Let me say that again. I did not say they've scored more runs than they've allowed. They've hit more home runs than runs allowed. Runs, doesn't matter. They've hit more home runs. That's insanity. That doesn't happen. And this isn't a team you look at their lineup and you're like, they got some boppers. No, it's like, no, they got a scrappy team. They are crushing people. Now, they're hot. It's April. They're hot right now. They're not going to go 162-0. Be pretty sick if they did, but I don't even know if they win 100 games. They're just hot right now. But man, you ride that way. That's part of baseball too, is confidence and like how you feel that day. Well, when you're winning games like this, boop, 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 you're just riding that wave. And that wave's a lot easier to ride when you're this good, because you go to the field and you're like, we're going to win. That's half the battle when you show up in the big leagues and you're like, dub, we're going to win.
You just want to rack up as many victories as you can early on too. So if nothing else, you're helping yourself.
That's the thing with baseball. Baseball is a coin flip. Most of the time, it's a coin flip. That's why baseball betting is so hard. And the best betting analysts or best, I don't know what you call them, whatever. The sharks, the professional bettors, like what? They're like 54% is like good. Because it's a flip of a coin. The best pitcher in baseball could be out there and just throw a dud or go six shutty, punch out 11 and give up a walk, a jam shot, dribbler, two guys on, boom, one bad pitch, three-run homer, you lose. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's what's crazy with baseball is you can do everything right and lose. So the fact that they're 9-0 and with that run differential, the way they're winning, it's just not real, man. That's crazy. And to our buddy Ryan Wesner, man, he's been all over me because I predicted that they would take a step back. So I can eat that crow. I get it. Like
early. It's early.
It is early, and a lot of stuff could happen, but it's going to be hard to picture them going where I said they were going to go this year. And I don't think that any of this has to do with analytics. I think they're just outplaying people. I think their players are overperforming right now. But that's what good teams do is they overperform. Mm-hmm. And that prediction of them finishing last in the AL East was more hopeful than anything. Because every year I count them out or have them just missing the playoffs and they end up second in the division. You know, it's frustrating. So I was more hopeful for the Red Sox that Tampa wasn't going to be good.
They have a team OPS of 967. Paul Goldschmidt won the MVP last year at 960. So they have like a combined team MVP 1-9 right now through the first
night. AL MVP, Tampa Bay Rays.
yeah, exactly. And in a rotation, like Jeffrey Springs hasn't given up a run this year. Drew
Rasmussen
hasn't given up a run this year. McClanahan's given up two earned runs
Stinks.
This year. Loser.
Yeah. Move him to the bullpen. He gave up runs.
But I've also never felt more confident about a top prospect because everybody's so highly touted and, oh, he's a top five prospect. He's going to be great. He has all these tools. I've never felt more confident about a top prospect than Wander Franco because of Tampa Bay's resume, their front office. They don't pay players.
They don't pay him. If they pay, well, last year he was hurt. He didn't play well. And I was like, no way did they miss on this guy.
No.
But this year, oh my goodness.
He played 70 games his rookie year. And that was enough for Tampa Bay to be like, yep, here's 250.
They also pay him based off of what they saw in the minor leagues too. It's like, because you see him developing. So you can pretty much say like, that's the player we're going to get. Obviously the big league is a different beast and you want to see a kid at 20 years old, 21 years old to continue to develop and see if they can handle the big leagues. There's been plenty of big prospects that got to the big leagues and didn't do anything. So, but to your point, they don't pay people. And the fact that they dropped $200 million on them, got to mean something.
They have a guy named Tyler Glasnow who could be coming back here shortly too.
They,
I know.
They don't need him. Trade him.
Easy. I know the injury history. I know, but just, you know. Reinforcements could be on the way.
Reinforcements.
Talked about the Angels. They're off to a 5-4 start. The Rangers are off to a 5-4 start. Mets fans are going to be Mets fans and overreact to their 5-5 start. One thing that concerned me with the Mets is that sometimes Francisco Lindor can be a little too pull happy. Right now, he leads all of Major League Baseball with a 60% pull rate. That's how he got out of his slump a year ago. Was he
started right?
To go
he
the
probably
other way.
And he probably isn't as quick to get out of that approach just because there's not three infielders on that side. So he's probably thinking like, I can continue to get some knocks that I wouldn't have gotten last year or the year before.
Yeah.
So, but to your point, yeah, he needs to get back to left, center, middle of the field, and he seems to lock it in when he's doing that.
Joey Gallo is hot, by the way. Speaking of pole guys,
good.
Three homers. That's nice.
He's due for a good year.
Trevino told us on the pod. He was like, nothing changes with Joey. Like, he's the same guy. It's just the hits weren't coming for him.
Yeah. But I mean, at some point that gets in your head. Like,
yeah.
He's human. They're all human. You know, guys like Mike Trout aren't everywhere. And that's why Mike Trout's special is. If he has a bad week, it's like, that's it. Like, he doesn't have those prolonged slumps because he'll still get two walks. Mm-hmm. And end up being 1-for-2 with a double. And it's like, for your confidence, all of a sudden, just looking and seeing that on the box score, you feel better about it, and it digs you out.
Going back to the Angels real quick, too. I think this is, you might have hit on this before. This is probably their best starting rotation that they've had in the greater half of a decade. Sandoval's looked fantastic.
He's really good.
Reed Detmers' velocity is up by
dude. His curveball's filthy.
by two ticks. So his average velocity last year, about 93 and a half. Now it's up over 95. And you mentioned the curveball too. I know the numbers and production isn't quite there through his first two starts, 9-2.
Yeah, but like all four of his pitches, it looked really good.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't have his expected numbers up here, but I would imagine they're looking pretty good. Like he's kind of turning a corner, I think. Tyler Anderson, Sandoval, Otani. Otani's looked ridiculous. As expected,
he's on. I mean, he's on MVP track again.
But their bullpen has just shit the bed.
Right.
Jaime Barria, 5.40 ERA. Hergett has looked terrible, and I'm sure you saw.
That's a human glitch, right?
Hergett.
Yeah. Don't they call him the?
Is that his nickname?
I think Pitching Ninja calls him the human glitch. Mm. It didn't. That's the one that like is herky jerky sidearm. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
Did you see their minor league team, their AA minor league team?
No.
They threw it was a 7-inning
double. Oh, that was them? Okay, I know where you're going. Against Chattanooga?
The Rocket City Trash Pandas. That's their actual AA affiliate name.
That's amazing.
And they played the Chattanooga Lookouts. They threw a 7-inning no-hitter. It was a 7-inning game. Chattanooga Lookouts did not get a single hit. They scored 7 runs. They won the game 7-5.
Was it like 5 walks, wild pitches, hit by pitches?
Error in center field.
2 errors. Yeah.
Error in center field brought home 3 runs. There was at least 4 or 5 hit by pitches.
Look, man, every year things happen in baseball. We go, we've never seen that before. And that's why I love this sport. It's like you just don't know. When you show up to the ballpark, something's going to happen and you're like, rarely does a game go by, even as a player, where you like don't have the thought of, has that ever happened before? I love it, man. That's nuts.
Yeah, and a lot of people think, oh, these new rules, it's taken away from nuance of the game now, dude. Like
you gotta look up. Hold on. Okay, so Brandon McCarthy, who I got my first career hit against, I worked out with him in the offseason. I've played against him forever. Believe he's in the front office with the Rangers now. So he tweeted, and there was a writer that did a story on this and posted it with that box score from the Trash Pandas and the Lookouts from that game. And Brandon McCarthy said, I'm reading his tweet. I'll send it to you so you can throw it up. Once during BP, I walked up to Andy. So Andy is this guy named Andy Hawkins. Let's see. I'm going to get this right. I'm pretty sure he was a pitcher. He threw a no-hitter and lost. And I think it was the first time the only time it's ever happened in the big leagues. So Brandon McCarthy, once during BP, I walked up to Andy and out of curiosity in the moment, asked him, has anyone ever thrown a no-no and lost in the big leagues? And Andy looked at him and said, are you fucking kidding me? He replied and walked away. I had no idea the only person on earth to do it is the person I chose to ask.
That's brutal.
How good is that? Yeah. That's so Brandon McCarthy too. Like genuinely was just like had a thought and went up to this guy who was one of their pitching coaches and was, hey, yeah, has this ever happened? And the guy just told him to F off and walked away. And he was so confused later to find out that was the only guy that's ever done it.
It's tough.
What are the chances?
Yeah. Well, the Reds too, because Hunter Green, it was a combined no hitter.
It was combined
last year. And
yeah,
Chattanooga is the Reds AA affiliate.
Right.
So no hit scoring runs apparently is the thing with the Cincinnati Reds. Ben Joyce, by the way, who you remember from University of Tennessee, he was on the bump for the Trash Pandas when the first few walks he got taken out mid inning, but then the error in center field that led to 3 run scoring. Ben Joyce was on the hill.
You gotta wonder if that guy's gonna like figure it out and not just be a guy that throws hard.
He throws hard. That's for damn sure.
Yes, he does.
What do you think of Milwaukee at 7-2? I was down on them. It's young guys. Garrett Mitchell, Bryce Turang.
I don't think they sustain it.
Yeah.
I don't think the Cardinals' slow start's going to stay that way either. I think they're a much better team. I think the Cubs are going to be better than we think. I think the Brewers are going to be worse than we think. And I think the Cardinals are going to be exactly who we thought they were. I'm standing by that. And I also haven't watched much of Milwaukee, so I can't really talk much on their team, yeah, if we're being honest.
Like, it's not like Yelich is really balling out. He's hitting 257. He has one long ball. Brian Anderson.
Yeah, just saw his homer.
Brian Anderson has a 1226 OPS. I've always been a big BA fan, actually.
I really liked him when Miami. He came up in Miami. Yeah.
Yes. He's talented. He's got a lot of tools, man.
Is he playing third base for them?
Yeah. Like, is he going to have a 1200 OPS throughout the season? Probably not. Garrett Mitchell.
No, but if it's 800 plus, 850, yeah, it's like that's a win.
And that's what Milwaukee does. Like, they go and get your Rowdy Tellezes. They go, they kind of get the scraps and they do a good job of it. That's what they typically do on a year to year basis. Garrett Mitchell, is he going to have a 1048 OPS as the season goes on? Probably not. They're going to pitch, though. Peralta, Woodruff, Burns. Burns has actually been their worst pitcher in the rotation. He's had an atrocious start. 9 1/3 innings pitch. He's given up 10 earned.
Tell me that junk with the arbitration in the offseason didn't have something to do with this. It's hard to not think that, like, that just changed his mind frame a little bit. I know he still wants to go out and pitch well because he still wants to get paid by somebody. But at some point, like, when a team does you dirty like that, I don't want to say does you dirty because that's common with arbitration. But the way Milwaukee went about it, it's like, fuck you guys. Kind of like, and it just kind of, you're not as engaged. I feel like, I don't know. I'm totally just pulling that out of midair. I don't know if that's how he feels or he just had a bad start, which is probably the case.
You mentioned the Cardinals. What do you think of Tyler O'Neill getting publicly benched by manager Ollie Marmol?
That's trash. Trash. Can't happen. Cannot happen.
From O'Neill or Marmol?
Marmol. Yeah. That cannot happen. Nothing good will come of that. This isn't some rookie who never plays hard and you're trying to, like, set the tone, or this young clubhouse that you're trying to set the rah-rah, set the tone in the clubhouse. What? This is a good team. Tyler O'Neill, regardless of your opinion on the situation, plays his ass off. He's known to be like hair on fire, play hard type player. It's not like this is something he's done multiple times and you go, what are you doing? It's going to create a divide and a disconnection in the clubhouse to the manager's office. That is the last thing you want. Trust me, I played in 2012 with Bobby V with a bunch of good players in Boston, and we stunk because everyone hated the manager. Don't do that. I'm not saying that's going to happen there, because with Arnado and Goldschmidt and those guys, they've already washed it clean and forgotten about it. But hopefully Marmol learns from that and realizes that is a terrible way to go about business within your clubhouse, because Tyler O'Neill will never respect him like he used to ever again. Because you threw him under the bus, and it's your job to protect your players. You can disagree with them, and you can be pissed at something they did. But yes, you say, hey, Tyler, let's come to my office. Let's talk. Close the door. No one knows what's said, and you still get your point across without creating a disconnection and a loss of respect within the clubhouse. You can't have that. Can't happen. Period.
No one in the public should ever know. If you get benched publicly, no.
Did you watch the replay? Did you think he did, like?
No, he looked. Was he going 110%? Probably not. Was he going 95%? Probably.
I didn't see anything wrong with what he did.
People are saying that when he rounded third base. So here's, let me lay out the situation. Ball's hit the right field. O'Neill's on second base. He's rounding third and trying to score. Keep in mind, it's a 4-1 ball game. This one run probably isn't going to be the difference in the game, but, you know, teach their own on that. Ronald Acuna comes up throwing. It's a hard hit ball, and he's nailed at home plate by 10 feet. People are saying that he might have, when he rounded third base, not, you know, pushed off third base and kind of gained velocity as he's rounding the bag. I personally didn't see it. O'Neill's a massive human being.
Also, like a toy when you're running the bases, there. Sometimes you slow down because your initial thought, if you take your eye off the third base coach, or you lose sight of him or whatever it may be, you check up just enough because you think he's going to hold you up. You know the arm that's in right field. You have an internal clock in knowing if I'm going to make this a play or not. And it was probably something inside of him that told him, I'm dead if I run. He started probably to slow down and then saw he's waving me, so I got to go. So who knows if he went in the dugout and was like pissed at the coach.
If anybody should be disciplined or publicly called out, it should be the third base coach who sent a guy. And understand there was two outs, but it's a 4-1 game.
Yeah, I hate the whole situation. It was a baseball play. There's a lot of variables. He probably checked up a hair just because he knew the situation, probably knew he was, even if he is full like pedal to the metal, he's still out, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So regardless of all that, regardless of every detail that we just talked about, Marmol's got to do better. Period. That can't happen.
I just don't understand why you make it public. What is your,
that's what I mean. That's like, it just,
what is your incentive? What's the incentive for making it public?
That makes me think it's personal. Like that, it, when things like that happen that don't happen, it makes me think he just doesn't like him.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times if there's a like an insecure manager, sometimes this happens. I mean, they're human too. Yeah. There's a question and then like, he's just covering his own ass. But in that situation, that doesn't make sense. So that just makes me think like, does he just not like O'Neill? Like, why else would he do that? Is he trying to set, maybe he thought it would like fire up the clubhouse, be like, well, let's play hard. Cause you know, doesn't work like that in the big leagues. These are grown men. They're not high school players. You don't have to do that. If you can't get fired up to play hard in the big leagues, you shouldn't be there. And this is a guy who plays hard for you every day. Mm-hmm. So clean it up. Don't do that again. I guarantee he won't do it again.
Padres are off to a 6-4 start. Massive victory over Atlanta.
They took 3 of 4 from Atlanta in Atlanta.
And the only one that they lost was a walk-off by Orlando Arcia.
Correct.
Did you happen to see Manny Machado's ejection in San Diego? Last week, here, I'll give you some context. Box running down. Machado's in the box.
Oh, yeah. I saw it.
Yeah. And then he put up his hand in the home plate umpire.
He put his hand up like as it was hitting 8. So it was like right at it.
He was not granted time.
He should have been granted time, number one. Yeah. His hand went up in time. It was close.
Yeah.
But the umpire was so locked in on the clock, he probably didn't notice it.
You know what I find interesting, though? So according to all of the MLB.com rules and articles, which is what we should be basing this, the rule on, it says that the hitter must be alert to the pitcher at 8 seconds. However, a lot of the articles, including CBSSports.com, ESPN, and Bleacher Report, it says that the hitter must be alert to the pitcher by the end of 8 seconds. In other words,
or like when by the point it turns to 7, right?
Yes. So in other words,
like if it's counting down 8.0,
that's 1 second. So by those rules, and again, this is not MLB.com, these are third party sites, but they're very credible to say the least.
I'm going to make this very clear and easy to understand. The umpire messed up. He should have given him time. Yeah. Manny then being pissed would not have been tossed had he not said, "You're being a douchebag."
Yeah.
Okay, that's why he wasn't tossed, because yes, you're not supposed to argue it, but in certain situations when umpires know, like, I might have messed it up, they're probably going to let you argue a little bit just because they're like, I screwed up. Like, I'm not going to toss you quickly because I deserve this a little bit. But as soon as Manny pointed at him and said, "You're being a douchebag," and it was very clear he said that,
yeah,
he's gone. And then the manager came out and he's like, "Why'd you toss him?" And you see the umpire go, "Call me a douchebag."
Bob Melvin's reaction was perfect.
He was like,
he hunched over, like, "Damn it! All right, yeah."
He called me a douchebag. Yeah, Bob goes.
Okay. It was a very Crash Davis.
Yeah.
What was the magic word he used in Bull Durham?
Cocksucker.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Dodgers are 5-5. San Francisco 4-5. We talked about Pittsburgh. My Miami Marlins are off to a 4-6 start. We talked about the Twins briefly, and then
Hold on, Marlins. I got to throw this in. That game Sandy Alcantara threw, Alcantara. Sorry.
Yeah.
1 hour 58 minutes. 57. Is that what it was?
57.
Pardon me. 1-0. Right. First game under 2 hours. It won't be the last one under 2 hours this year, but that was. I was doing pre and post in Boston, and I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, oh my God. At this point, Boston was still playing. They were playing those, like, they're scoring at least nine runs every game. So those games, there was like 20 runs scored total in a couple of those games, and they were like 3 hours and 6 minutes, which normally those games would be like 4-hour-plus games. So everyone's like, oh, it's not working. They're still playing 3-hour games. I'm like, dude, look how many runs are being scored. Another day in, where were they? Detroit. It was a 14-5 game. 19 runs, 2 hours and 38 minutes.
Jeez.
Like, it's working. Not to go back to the rules. Go. I just wanted to throw that in there.
No, it's interesting. I mean, a game that is a 1-0 ball game and a CG shutout should end in an hour and 57 minutes. It shouldn't.
Yeah, there's nothing else happening. There's just pitching.
like a game that is 1-0 CG shutout lasting 3 hours is boring as hell. That means the pitcher is taking his sweet ass time in between each and every pitch.
Yeah.
Play Buchholz of the world. You know,
Dice K.
Yeah. Oof. Like a game like that should end. I mean, you were probably on the phone with Miami's communications department. Like, hey, you got any openings? Cause I do pre and post game.
I could have another
30 minutes with my
no
girl.
One's watching the Miami Marlins pregame show.
I was.
Whatever. That's one. You just support me.
You got any big takeaways before we close up shop here?
No, I think it was a great first week.
Yeah, I agree.
Lots of storylines to follow right now, which
TV
is great.
Ratings. I'm looking forward to TV ratings. That's going to be a big indication.
Yeah, and I'm not going to make some big note on certain teams, their starts. Like, give me 30, 40 games before I do that. I say 40 games, like a month and a half. 40 games is a good benchmark to say this is who you got.
Give me a 7-game American League Championship Series between Toronto and the Los Angeles Angels. I'm in.
Mm. I mean, that was a fun series.
Mm. Shohei Ohtani, really bases loaded, bottom of the 10th inning. 12-11 was the score. It was
but
actually
he grounded the second, though, right?
He grounded out the second. It was Trout, then Ohtani. 3-2 count, by the way, to Trout. Trout ended up walking. And then
that was electric series. Trout hit some bombs that series, too.
Yeah. He looks his 20.
If they don't move that truck in left center, it's going to look like a golf ball by the end of the season. Just dimples all in it from him crushing it.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, my man. Good stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of golf, I'm going to hit the links. I'll let you know what my score is.
Is that the shirt you're wearing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. I like it.
Compliments?
I think it's perfect for is it a button down or is it a polo?
Polo.
Oh, okay. I thought about saying if it's a button down, that's more like go to the like resort style pool, get you a little Miami Vice with a pineapple and an umbrella in it. But if it's just a polo, I'm down for that. I like loud polos.
I'll text you my score. It will be over 100. I can guarantee it.
I can't wait.
Thank you all for tuning in. Talk to you next time on the Wake and Rake podcast, part of the Believe Network. Peace out, people.